Our scripture reading this morning comes from the book of Genesis, the first verses of that book. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep. Dark. A wind from God swept over the face of the waters. And then God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God was good. And God separated the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. God always blesses the reading of the Holy Scripture. Several months ago, I got this crazy that I kept trying to get rid of, and that is that I should preach a series of sermons on the different books, 66 books of the Bible, and that I should just take one book each week and preach a sermon on that. Part of the reason that seemed crazy is because, for instance, the book of Genesis has 50 chapters in it, and you could imagine how long that sermon would be to try to cover a book like that. But I couldn't get rid of the idea. It tinkering with ways that I do this. And so we're going to start that. Get like to Daya, and I've got nobody left. I'll have to switch and try a different approach to some things. But with each of these books, I think there's some value in being able sometimes when we, almost always when we have a Sunday school lesson or we have a daily devotional or when we hear a sermon, we hear just a portion of a book of the Bible. And it's an old phrase, but sometimes we fail to see the forest for the trees. And so the purpose of this series of sermons is to help us see something when we look at a book as a whole that maybe we see if we just looked at a snippet of it. So today we're going to start with Genesis. With each of these books, I'm going to do four things. I'm first going to share a little bit about what's in the book. Some weeks it will sound familiar to you, probably like today. Most of us, by the time we get to Habakkuk, maybe that might be, everybody will definitely need a refresher on what that's about. I also want to talk about what the bad news is, because all of the 66 books of the Bible have some bad news in them. And then I want to talk about what the good news is, because all 66 books of the Bible contain some good news that counters the bad news. And then I want to talk, finally, about practical applications of these books. So, plunge in today with Genesis. The book of Genesis contains the best collection of stories to be found in any of the Bible's 66 books. If you want stories, go to Genesis. The book of Genesis gives us two stories of creation. The first story of creation starts in darkness and chaos, and it reaches its climax finally on the sixth day when God creates human beings, male and female, in God's own image. The second story of creation starts with God scooping up some dirt from the earth and breathing God's own breath into this human creature, and then proceeds by God planting a garden for this human being, and then bringing this human being all sorts of animals, and then realizing that this human being is incredibly lonely, and so God creates a sexual partner so that there will be not so much loneliness. The stories of Genesis move beyond the creation stories then, and we get a story about a man who kills his brother. And then the book of Genesis gives us another story about a group of human beings who have this stunning idea that they can equal God in power and ability, and they make an effort to try to do that. And then the book of Genesis goes on and it gives us stories about Abraham and Sarah. Abraham is 70 years old and he and his wife, they strike out as nomads to become founders of a new culture, a new religion, a new type of community. Abraham, 75 years old, leaves comfort of being settled and strikes out to start something new. Who knows where and who knows what at the beginning. Abraham is especially known in for two things particularly. First of all, he's known for being richly blessed by God. He's the wealthiest person that we have encountered up until this point in the story. He has been richly blessed by God, not just with material things, but he's also been blessed by God with a great deal of wisdom and a great deal with a big heart. And this blessing that comes to Abraham is a blessing that he in turn passes on to others. The book of Genesis makes it very clear to Abraham so that Abraham can be a blessing to somebody else and them to somebody else until eventually the whole world is blessed. So he's known for being blessed passing on the blessings. The second thing that is important about Abraham and the stories of Abraham is that Abraham is the first human being to participate in what we call a covenant. Now, in order to understand what a covenant is, it is most helpful to compare that with what a contract is. Contracts are the way human beings normally relate to each other. You take one of my eyes, I'll take one of yours. You knock out one of my teeth, I'll knock out one of yours. That's a contract. Contracts are formal, legal, narrow, cyclical, enforceable, and risk-averse. Covenants, on the other hand, are spiritual. It's a way you can relate to a person that involves the spiritual. It involves flexibility. It involves being full of grace. With a covenant, the story between people in a relationship evolves. Covenant is expansive and it's risk-taking. Now, in the story of Genesis, we get about a quarter of the way through the book, and it's clear that God has figured out that human beings, trying to relate to human beings, is virtually impossible. To try to get along with a person, talk about a dead end. And so about a quarter of the way through the book of Genesis, God has reached this created human beings with all of this wonderful potential, but to try to deal with a person is another matter. And it's at this point with Abraham that God decides to switch strategies and relate to people through covenant and not through contract. He makes the covenant with Abraham. He will be generous and merciful with Abraham. He will give Abraham far more than he deserves, wealth, fame, family. And Abraham, in turn, will be circumcised. He will forego talking negatively about the future all the time. And he will stick with God even when it may not make sense to him at the moment. Starting with Abraham, we see what it means to live in covenant, not in contract. Genesis tells us the story about the beginning of a new nation. It's not like really the story of the beginning of the United States like we read in our history books when we were in school. The story of the beginning of the nation of Israel, the book of Genesis, is told in a very different way. It tells the story in personal, intimate terms. It's not so much, Israel is not so much a nation that's born out of a homeland or conquest or democracy. It is instead born this nation of Israel. We sometimes call the Jewish people or the Hebrew. All are terms interchangeable for our purposes here today. In order to understand the beginning of Israel, the nation of Israel, we have to pay attention to the stories of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph. In order to understand the beginning of Israel as a nation, we have to see how Isaac and his half-brother Ishmael were really different from each other. We also have to see how Jacob and Esau, twins, were different from each other. We read, in order to understand what the beginning of Israel was like, we read the story about how Jacob wrestled all night with an angel and got injured in the process. And it is in reading story of Jacob wrestling and something profound about what it means to be the people of Jesus. We move on to read stories about Joseph and his brothers that are heartbreaking and yet also courageous and resilient. We understand as we read the stories of Israel what it means to be Israel in our own day, what it means to be the church as we read those stories. And the characters of Genesis. The characters of Genesis forever fascinate us. We see Adam and Eve. We see more of them than they want us to see. There's a beautiful Garden of Eden in the book of Genesis and a talking serpent and all of the beauty and all of the food and all of the sex one could possibly want. And then there's a sudden change of venue. Suddenly we're no longer in the Garden of Eden. We're outside the Garden of Eden, and we see that it's being guarded by an angel with a flaming sword who will never, ever let us in again. It is in the book of Genesis that we read about people who live 600 years and 800 years and 900 years, and the granddaddy of them all is Methuselah, who lives 969 years. We read about those people in the book of Genesis, and we read about Methuselah's grandson, Noah, who was the Bible's first true hero. We read about how Noah was able to build an ark and save multiple animal species, including the human species, the first hero of the Bible. But in the end, Noah, the first Bible hero, will fall drunk and embarrass his sons. It is in Genesis that we see the beginning of language and the beginning of diversity and the beginning of race. It's in Genesis that we see the first rudimentary practices of religion as sacrifices are offered on altars. It's in Genesis that we encounter an amazing array of women. And even though at that time, stories, the women were clearly assigned roles of servitude, it is in Genesis that we will find women who are instead subversive. It is in the book of Genesis, as we read the story of the women, and we'll discover that by being subversive, by having minds of their own, by claiming their own agency, women make everyone more human. And we have the irony that in the book of Genesis, men make everyone more human in becoming more humble and obedient. But in Genesis, women become and make us more human by their disobedience and their assertiveness. And so it is, that's Genesis. No book has better stories of the Bible than Genesis. And so we bring the three questions I'm going to bring to every book. What's the bad news? The good news? And what's the practical application? So what's the bad news of Genesis? The bad news is this. It's a book that starts in darkness. And the darkness never entirely leaves. It's present through all the stories. And through the entire book. And in the book of Genesis, we not only encounter darkness as a physicist would describe it, but we also encounter darkness as a mother would describe it. A mother who sees her son die before herself. a mother who sees another son eternally alienated from the family. It is in Genesis that we see the darkness of violence and greed and dishonesty. It is in Genesis that we can feel the darkness creeping and growing as people blame each other for the problems that exist. It is in Genesis that we are first introduced to the ominous darkness of death. It is in Genesis that we are first introduced to the awful consequences that occur because people fear death in foolish ways. It is in Genesis that we first ponder the darkness of what it means to feel lonely. Genesis gives us our first glimpse of deception and lying and confusion. It is in Genesis that evil is first introduced. And not only is evil introduced in the book of Genesis, but as the book moves on, we experience the growth, maturing of it, the sophistication, gaining of its power, story after story. The bad news of Genesis comes as we see very clearly in its stories what it means for us to be at odds with one another, in enmity with other groups of people. It is in Genesis that the genders turn against each other, the races turn against each other, the nations turn against each other. Functional families, that we see that oftentimes the people who cause us the most problems are the people who've shared a home with us. Not to depress you, but the bad news of Genesis also includes women who are barren, siblings who are jealous, and neighbors who lie. And it is in Genesis that the earth itself fights back against things that human beings do. There is, in the book of Genesis, collusion, obstruction of justice, bribery, corruption in high places. We see alcoholism, we see incest. Chaos all through the book of Genesis crouches nearby, and people are ever mindful of its threat. The bad news of Genesis is that it starts in darkness, and that darkness just keeps coming. That's the bad news. So what's the good news? The good news of Genesis is actually stronger than the bad news. The good news of Genesis comes when at the very beginning we hear the voice of God speaking into the darkness. Let there be light. The good news is that when God spoke those words, the light appeared. The good news is that the light was good. The good news is the cosmos is ruled by a God who can bring the light. Anytime, news is that God can speak light into being. Even in this, nothing existed except for chaos and darkness. Even when we are in darkness at its most primal, vast and untamable, if God can pierce that kind of darkness that prevails at the beginning of Genesis, can pierce any darkness that we have in our lives or in our world. God can, with simply a word, bring darkness to an end. Any darkness we know. Now, true, in Genesis, darkness never quits. It keeps showing up. Like day and night. It keeps coming around. But God's light always appears. And even in the darkness, there's light. Stars, moon, the light of a lamp, the light of a candle. The light of God and its goodness is the good news of Genesis. It is good news for all who are sad. It is good news for all who are lonely. It is good news for all who face death. It is good news for all those who feel overwhelmed by all the dark things we think and do. It is good news for all who feel so powerless as we look out upon the world and we see evil and oppression seeming to grow by leaps and bounds. What is the good news of Genesis? It's the good news of light in the midst of darkness. It's the good news of color in the midst of darkness. Think of the color of creation. Think of all the colors that appear in the darkness, the colors of the oceans and the mountains and the hills. Think of all the color that appears. Think of all the creation occurring, even though darkness continues. Creation occurring, and yes, creation has its dark side. It has its violent effects. Creation itself at times can be merciless and tone deaf to human needs. But no one can deny the goodness of creation either. And in Genesis, creation unfolds. We have mountains and hills and rivers and oceans and freshwater springs. In Genesis, springtime that follows winter. And we have summer and we have fall. In Genesis, we have gardens and trees and botany galore. In Genesis, we have a parade of animals that come before Adam, the same parade of animals we see in our own lives. In Genesis, we see majestic beasts, domestic companions, and things that wiggle and crawl in the earth. In Genesis, the sky is filled with birds, musical sounds, and the waters abound with fish. In Genesis, there are babies, new generations appearing to bless people who've been around a while. In Genesis, there is the joy of human physiology. What is the good news of Genesis? People are created in the image of God, not as in some ancient cultures where people are created simply to be the gods out of evil substance, but in Genesis, people are created of God. The good news of Genesis is we're powerless. It's to a significant degree of our destiny. In Genesis, human beings have authority if we can recognize it and use it. What is the good news of Genesis? In Genesis, people find companions, friends, compliments of God. We see the emergence of music nudged by God. In the book of Genesis, cities emerge and people are at home in their fields and with their livestock and with their tools. It is in the book of Genesis that we first see people starting to cook and hospitality, sharing grace and bread with others. It's in the book of Genesis that human beings of ambition start to travel and discover and have adventures. It's in the book of Genesis that people discover language, they're able to speak to one another, and they're able to understand each other. In the book of Genesis, we see through the darkness of social chaos, people beginning to collaborate and compromise. And it's in the book of Genesis that people first begin to relate to God, whether through prayer or conversation or making offerings or remembering stories of the past. What is the good news of Genesis? It is God who blesses people without any reason to bless them whatsoever, but simply because of God's grace and love. And people in turn, passing those blessings on to others without any other reason for passing them on than love. The good news of Genesis is that a guy shows up and builds a boat, an ark, for our salvation just in the nick of time. The good news of Genesis is that we can wrestle and we can argue even with God. to our benefit. We can wrestle and we can argue and we can disagree with one another. Not because it's the prelude to a relationship disintegrating into oppression and war. And we can disagree and we can argue with each other so that we as a community can be stronger in struggling and striving. The good news of Genesis is that God ever ceases to speak light into our darkness. The good news of Genesis. And then what's the practical message? There are some practical things to remember that can make a difference in our lives. First of all, there's practicality to the stories. One of the reasons I like the stories of Genesis is because they don't deny that darkness exists. Pretty upfront. The stories never deny the darkness. But the stories do keep us from being intimidated and overwhelmed and defeated by darkness. Genesis has to, in order for us to have the practical benefit of those stories. The stories keep us from being intimidated and overwhelmed by the darkness we face. The stories of Genesis must be told and retold for us to have that benefit. It's like buying a gym membership and never showing up. Not going to help. Have the book of Genesis sit on a shelf. Not going to help much. But when we read and reread the story, we will discover that the artistic side of our brains will grasp those stories. And we will find that divine light and wisdom and strength is being poured into our spirits. And with that light, the darkness shall not prevail in any of our lives. There's practical value in the stories. Secondly, there's practical value in Genesis when we remember that, like Abraham, we have been blessed in order to be a blessing. We've not been blessed in order to hang on and hoard and not let go no matter what. There's practical value. It may seem to receive something and then just keep giving it away. That seems impractical to the world where we live, but it's actually very practical. People are blessed in order to be blessed. And when we live in that way, in the way Abraham lived, we will discover enormous value in our lives. And then the third thing that has practical value, the stories, the understanding that we've been blessed to be a blessing, and the third practical value that comes to us from Genesis is beginning to think about what it means to relate to each other in covenant rather than contract. People are hard to deal with. I've never met anybody who's not eventually hard to deal with. Fortunately, we managed to not get too involved with each other, so, but people are hard to deal with. And we tend to deal with people on a contractual basis. Well, it's not usually written down, but we tend to deal with people with a contract mentality. Tit for tat, quid pro quo. You do this and then I'll do that. If you don't live up to your end of the bargain, then I'm not going to be some sort of sucker and let you take advantage of me. Fair is fair. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Whatever you give, you're going to get back. You give something good, you'll get something good back. When we live by contracts, as we human beings do, we discover that pretty soon the whole human race ends up blind and toothless. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. People are so hard to deal with. And so the book of Genesis introduces to us the concept of relating to people through covenant. And that's what God does. God tries it out, first of all, with Abraham. And it's in the book of Genesis that we discover the practical value of relating to people in a different kind of way. It's in Genesis that we discover the value of relating to people not by the letter of the law, but by the spirit of the law. It's in Genesis that we discover the value of relating to people not tit for tat, but by grace. It's in Genesis that we discover the value of relating to people not by predictable reaction, creativity. It's in Genesis that we discover the practical value of relating to somebody not by narrowing the relationship and trimming it off, but by expanding it. We discover in the book of Genesis that covenant is, practically speaking, invaluable if we want to have a friendship, or if we want to have a marriage, or if we want to have a good family, or if we want to be a church together, or if we're going to live with each other and other nations in this world. So Genesis, it's got great stories, and they have more practical value than you'd think a story would have. It's got a wise teaching that we're blessed in order to be a blessing. It introduces us to covenant. It's pragmatic. It's full of darkness, just like real life is. But above all, I keep going back to those first words. In the midst of the darkness, the voice of God. Let there be light. And there was light. And the light was good.